So for this time, I thought we would look at Tehillim Kuf Dalet, Tvarchi Nafshi. A question came up last week that I actually did a little digging on. We talked about Nevuah in Tehillim and the question of how we understand Pirkei Tehillim that seems to refer to events that are far forward in the future. So I noticed two things. One, there's an introduction which they print here to Tehillim. It's not clear to me who actually wrote this introduction. It's written right. It's printed here. It's not. You won't find it in that.
In the Hakama
volume
here too. It's the same one? No.
No. It's not the same as this. I don't know who put this in. Seems like it's not the publisher, but there's no name attached. But he discusses the issue of Nevuah in Tehillim. And this is what he says. He says, Lefi apshat, he says, on a basic level, on a very simple and straightforward level, he says, the Chachamim told us, we read it last week, that Tehillim was written via Asara Zakenu, right? 10 elders. And it's B'nai Korach, and Asaph, and Yedusun, and all. So he says, there's nothing to stop me from believing that some of them were after David HaMelech's time, before Tanakh was sealed. He says, Kol Od Shaisa Nevuah B'Yisrael, as long as there were Nevi'im, as long as there was prophecy, Ad Chosam HaNevi'im, until the end of the period of the Nevi'im, Malachi, who is Ezra, of course. Okay, so that's one. And then he says, on the other hand, it could just as easily be that this was real Nevuah. He says, I'm offering you either approach. Ibn Ezra, in his introduction to Tehillim, presents you with two views as well. He says, Yesh Omrim ki kol ha-sefer le-David v'hayil Navi. He says, some say the whole sefer is David, and David is indeed a Navi. And he says, Kimitzvah's David, Isho Elokim. The Pasuk says, like the instruction of David, Isho Elokim. Isho Elokim connotes Nevuah.
Nevuah, yeah.
And he says, that's indeed possible. On the other hand, Yesh Acherim Omrim, there are others who say, Ki ein b'sefer hazeh Nevuah la'asid, that there's no such thing in Tehillim as Nevuah for the future. U'bavur zeh kasvuah kadmonim im Iyov ha-Megillos, which is why it's not in Nevi'im, it's in Ksuvim. Right? We put it in with Iyov and Echa and Rus. And he says, then what do you do with Al-Naros Babel? He says, Va'amru ki Al-Naros Babel chibro echa v'namashorim b'Babel. According to them, so it was composed when the Jews were already in Galus Babel. Someone wrote it at that point. Remember, the Anshei Knesset HaGadola aren't there until after that, beginning in the second base of Mikdash. V'dati nota im divrei hakadmonim zal. But he says, if you ask me, my mind, he says, my opinion is to go with the first view he presented. Kizah sefer kulo nema b'ruach hakodesh. That the whole sefer is indeed with ruach hakodesh. And he says that's the way I. That's where I look at it.
That David was a Navi, right?
Was a Navi.
Yeah. Yes. Isha Elokim.
Exactly. And he says, don't be bothered by the fact that we use the term shir, you know, often in Tehillim, because that doesn't mean that he isn't a Nevuah. He says, look at Hazinu.
Hazinu.
Right? That's Nevuah. So there's no reason to feel compelled to say that it's not. That's just following up on the point from last week. Okay. In terms of Berachi Nafshi itself, the Malbim points out that Berachi Nafshi follows. Zach, if you want to do Tehillim, we're doing Tehillim. Okay. Either way, the Kuf Dalet follows Perek Kuf Gimel. And Malbim points out that Kuf Gimel speaks about Hashem guarding over a person's neshama. How Hashem protects Yireyav, He protects those who are in awe of Him. So we move from that discussion about how Hashem protects us to Hashem's responsibility for the Bria as a whole, all of creation. You can break down this parak into seven parts. The first part speaks about the elements. The first six psukim you find, if you look at, what did I do with it? I have a copy here also. There we go. If you look at the first part, it's about the basic elements. So you describe, you know, the heavens themselves, Shemayim, Rakia. You talk about the clouds. You talk about the winds. the earth, and the that's your first part, up until where it starts talking about the water. Tahom kalavush kisiso is the pasuk. Then you talk about bodies of water as well as land, and that takes you through pasuk yud beis, where you start talking about the really the birds at that point. Aleihem ov hashamayim yishkon, right? But it's regarding that which grows from the water. So you have the bodies of water and the land. From there, it moves into fruits, vegetables, trees, birds, mountain animals, and that runs until pasuk yudches, right? Pasuk yudches. Yudches concludes that, and at that point we go into asa yareach lemoadim, right? How Hashem sets up the moon for the seasons, correct? And then you have sun, moon, day and night, all the way through pasuk chav dalet, and then in chav hey we talk about the sea and what it contains, zayam gadol rachav yadayim, right? Which is already on the next page if you're following it on here. And it talks about the sea and the ships and the Leviathan. And then we go into the natural renewal of things, where Hashem provides the food and things grow and they survive, and then Hashem hides his face and then things die. And that takes us through Pasuk Lamed. Tishalach l'chai barayim v'shadesh b'nei adama. You send forth your spirit and things are created and renewed. And that brings us to the last part, Hashem's joy in the world and our joy in Hashem. Seven parts. So Ibn Ezra suggests that these seven are supposed to be parallel to Bereishis. If you take a look at the sources that I brought right below the outline, I bring you a line from Ibn Ezra. I don't know if you prefer the Hebrew or the English. No, at the bottom of this page, there you go.
Okay.
I don't know if you prefer the Hebrew or the English.
Either's okay.
Okay. Well, the Mizmor Azen, Yisaper Maaseh Bereishis, right? This Mizmor will speak about what Hashem created. Veichel Meha'or, starting from the light. Ki hu ahove betchilo, because that's what Hashem created first. Veachakach Hashemayim Bo'aretz, then the heavens and the earth, v'adishon v'hamaoros, the grasses and the luminaries, v'dgei hayam and the fish of the sea, v'chayas ha'sodeh, the animals of the field, v'ha'adam, and man. So you have the seven steps to it, paralleling the days of Bereishis. Right. You have certain explicit things in the pasuk, like nota hashamayim, establishing the heavens, the tahom, gevul samta, you place the boundary. These are all explicit references. There are two ways, though, in which this parak diverges from the order of Bereishis. Number one is that it's not quite in order. If you look at the flow of the parak, you find that he starts out all right with the heavens and the earth, and then he moves into the water providing for the animals, and then he has the grass, and he already has animals in there, and then he has the sun and the moon and the stars. But that's out of order. The animals aren't there till after the sun, moon, and stars. So that's number one. Number two, he also mentions malachim. Right? The osa malacha rucho. Here we translate it as you make winds your messengers. But it's a reference to the malachim. You have a couple of references in there.
Where is this? That's in one of the first seven, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You make winds your messengers. Osa malacha rucho.
What is the pasuk is this?
There. Pasuk Dalet. Right? So there's a reference to something that's not in Bereishis. We don't have an explicit mention of the creation of the Malachim. The Gemara asks, what day does Hashem create the Malachim? Day two, whatever. So the Da'at Mikra commentary suggests the diversion in the order is because the essence for David is that he wants to make a visual spectacle. He's trying to convey an image of Hashem's creation and the way everything interlocks. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to do everything in order, then you'll lose that image.
Yeah.
So the image trumps the Seder Habriya. In terms of bringing the agadic elements, like the malachim, it's true that it's not in the brain. gracious account, but it's part of what David is trying to convey, how everything Hashem created interlocks and interacts, and Hashem is supervising everything. So you can't do Barchi Nafshi without that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Looking at this from the poetic standpoint, there are a few very interesting things here. Number one, changes the person and the tense as he goes along. So for example, look at Pasuk Aleph. Okay, you see Pasuk Aleph there? No, but here I wanted to look at the change in the person.
Oh, the person, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You're not looking at tense now.
Right, no, we'll get to tense in a second. Actually, no, it's in there also that it's intense, that's true. But let's do person first. Baruch Nafshi es Hashem. Hashem is third person. Hashem Elokai Godalta Me'ot. He's addressing Hashem suddenly. Right, he switches from third to second. And it switches intense also in the sense that in Pasuk Aleph, he says Godalta Me'od, Hod Vadala Vashta, past tense, but in Pasuk Beis, it's Otef or Kasalma. He clothes himself in light, present tense. So how do I understand this? It's poetic. Number one, it's common in Shira in Tanakh to switch. But number two, and in terms of its status as a poem, is the fact that it's reflecting somebody who's so awed by what he sees. Yeah, the Rav used to say in commenting on the keynotes of Tisha B'Av, the keynotes jump. 1 minute we're reading a kina about Bais Rishon, then we're reading about the Crusades, and then we go back to Bais Sheni, back and forth. It's like an avil. An avil in the first days after a loss can't comprehend everything he's lost. He's just so in shock that his mind jumps from this to that to a third thing. So this, lahavdil, this is for the good, but we're so awed by what Hashem has done that you can't put it into a clear framework. So that's number one. Number two, it has this chorus that appears start, middle, and finish of Baruch Nafshi as Hashem. The way that I put this on the page was to try to show that. In the beginning, you have Baruch Nafshi as Hashem, right? Hashem Gadalta Ma'od. And then when you flip to the next slide, you get it again in Pasuk Chav Dalet. Where was it? It's in Chav Dalet and in Lamed Aleph. Right. Marabu Masech Hashem, this kind of exclamation. How manifold are your works, right? And then again in Lamed Aleph, the Yehi Chvod Hashem Le'olam, may the glory of Hashem endure forever. And then Ashir Al Hashem Bechayai, before Baruch Nafshi as Hashem. Right? So it's this kind of constant theme with all these different diversions along the way in the middle. So that's another part of the poetic theme. There's also, there are specific patterns of usage to create attractive depictions of nature. So for example, he goes from general to specific. General to specific. If you take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, I think I gave you references here on the page for it. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yashku kol chayso sadai, yishbru fraim tzma'am. He goes from kol chayso sadai, all the wild animals will get to drink from these springs, and then he mentions specifically the wild donkeys as an example of it. He does it again in Pasuk Tezayin.
Is that the Ephraim? Is that the Ephraim?
Yeah, wild donkeys. Hereb.
Hayosbar. What's Hayosbar?
Wild animals.
So it's not specific.
Right, he's not taking it as donkeys in particular, but
okay.
We use it that way.
Okay.
Like when Yishmael is called a Pere Adam, he's a wild man.
Wild man, yeah.
But Praim in general is a wild donkey. That's how we take it. You see it also in Pasuk Tezayin, where he mentions the trees. Yisbu atzei Hashem, right? The trees of God will be sated. Arzei Levanon, Asher Nata, the cedars of Levanon that he planted. So again, you go from the general trees to the specific cedars. The Pasuk Yudzayin, Asher Shem Tziporim Yekanenu, there the birds will nest. Chasida, the stork, will nest in those bushes. So they, so he goes from the general to the specific. He also does something remarkable. He shows contrasting entities in an environment to try to show this cornucopia of nature. So in Pasuk Ches, the Ya'alu Harim Yerdu Beka'ot, right? The mountains will rise, the valleys will fall. Pasuk Ches, the he has the sea and the land. Gvul Samta Bal Ya'avorun, that the sea should not pass past the boundary. Bal Yishavu Lechasos Haaretz, lest they go back to cover the land. Hamashlech Mayanim Banachalim Bein Arim Ya'alechun. You have the Mayanim versus the Nechalim, the springs versus the rivers. And so on through it. I gave you a few more references. But he shows these different entities. It's funny. If you ever go in Israel to, I'm trying to remember the name of the reserve. There's a specific nature preserve which tries to bring a lot of elements of Tanakh. Kidumim. It's not the city of, there's a city of Kidumim. But it's not that. It's a Neoth Kidumim. That's what it's called. I can make a note for myself. They try to preserve specifically plants that are mentioned in Tanakh and in Mishnah and in Gemara. So they have there, on one side of a road, a date tree, and then on the other side, a cedar. Reflecting the pasuk, Tzadika Tamar Yifrach Ke'eres Balbanon Yisgar. And they said, you'll never see them together in nature. David is trying to show you, you know, the different elements of them. So they have them by the side of a road. On one side they have the date, the other side they have the cedar.
So when you're talking about these poetic patterns, we just talked about, this is common in poetry in general?
Yes. When you create an image using contrasting things in order to show a spread. You know? Or sometimes it's to jolt the reader.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's jolting you there. I think he's just trying to reflect the range.
Yeah.
In terms of style, in terms of the text itself, there's a lot to appreciate here. The meter and rhythm that he uses, for example, in Pasuk Gimel, Hamikareh v'mayim al yosav, hasam avim rechuvo, hamalecha kanfei ruach. You have these three clauses, 1, 2, and 3, in all of which Hashem is acting, Hashem is doing something. Right? Setting up the heavens, riding on the clouds, traveling on the wind. But it's just the three clauses. They work very well. There are four clauses in Pasuk Tezayin. Pasuk Tezvav, I should say. Yayin yisamach levav enosh, lazhil panim misham, and lechem levav enosh. He said, no, it's not four. It's only three.
Yeah.
What was I thinking of? I don't know what I was thinking of. Maybe I just wrote down the wrong pasuk. I'll have to check into that. Most of these sentences have only two clauses, and they have a nice rhythm that works with it. In general, it's a very pleasant. It's a pleasant parak to read. He uses rhyme, which fascinates me because I think of rhyme as something in English. You don't think of it really in Hebrew. But for example, go back to Pasuk Beis. Ote or kasalma note shamayim kayaria, the ote note rhyme. In Pasuk Zayin, min kol min garascha yinusun min kol ramcha yechavezun. Yes, there's rhyme that he throws in there. And there's a lot of chiasmus here. Pasuk Tesvav has a triple.
What is chiasmus?
Chiasmus described the last time as the X.
Oh, that X thing. Yeah. Right. Okay.
So, yayin yisamach levav enosh. Lahatzhil panim bishamen.
Where are you now?
In Tesvav. So, the first clause is yayin yisamach levav enosh. Wine will gladden. Right? Lahatzhil panim. But now you reverse the verb and the subject, right? Now it's to make the face shine from oil. So oil appears after the action of making the face shine. And then the third clause, lechem levavanosh yishad, bread will make the heart of man full. So that he switched the order. He went wine, gladden, shine from oil, bread to satisfying. Is that to see?
Yeah.
That's the triple. Yeah, and that's the structure there. It's pretty intricate. I don't know that people realize it when they read it. But that's the way David does it. You also notice he flipped the way the heart functions. Right? He had in that same sentence, Yisamach levav enosh. Right? Yisamach levav enosh. Levav enosh yisad. In the end of the sentence. So that he flipped what's happening with the heart. He uses a lot of poetic synonyms throughout this, but the Malbim, characteristically, believes that there are differences between the synonyms. In other words, you shouldn't think that this is just a poetic thing. So, for example, Yinusun and Yechafeizun back in Pasuk Zion. You see Pasuk Zion? Min gamras cha yinusun min koram cha yechafeizun. So I could have just read that as, yeah, they run away from your rebuke. They tremble from the sound of your thunder. Malbim says, not so fast. On the flip side of the outline, top of the page, he says, Hanas, one who is fleeing, Nasmin hadavar al yedei hechreyach, flees from something by force. V'hanechpaz, but someone who is nechpaz, yechafezun, nechpaz el hadavar, v'vnei shiritzono badavar ahu, means that he's rushing to get to something, which fits by Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? It isn't just that they're running out of Egypt, they're bechit hazon to get to a destination, right? They get to the point to which Hashem is bringing them. That's the idea. So he says that that's an example where there's a synonym that's not really a synonym. Another example that he has of this is a fascinating one in Pasuk Yud Dalet, where he has Chatzir and Esev. You see that? Matzmiach Chatzir labeima veEsev labodas haAdam. So I could have said Chatzir is the grass and Esev is the grass, right? The translation that you have here on the sheet, what I did with this is I didn't do the translation straight. What I did was I started from the JPS, Jewish Publication Society. I cleaned it up to make it a little more readable. I took out the these and the thys and the thous and the wouldest and diddest. And then I made it into a poem because theirs is just, you know, right, a straight read. But what they do with the sentence is they have chatzir as grass. You cause the grass to spring up for the cattle. And they take Esev as an herb for the service of man.
And here he translates it Masmiach Desha for chatzir.
Right.
And Esev, he says, Minei Tzua.
So there you go. He has a reason for saying Minei Tzua. The reason is because look at the rest of the sentence. It talks about bread. So that's why it makes sense for him to use the word tua there. So the Malbim gives you the read on it. I didn't bring it here on the sheet. The Malbim says that the idea is that, how does he do it? He says, Chatzir and Desha, and that's why they get Desha over there, reflects the growth of wild grass. Esev is something that you cultivate towards a certain end. And it's clear in the pasuk, because it says, Matzmiach chatzir la behema, Hashem makes the chatzir grow for the animals. We don't plant that. Ve'esev lavodat ha'adam. And grass is for man's work. We grow that in order to be able to turn it into bread. So all the synonyms are there. On the one hand, they're poetic, but on the other hand, there's a layer of meaning
that's beneath them.
Okay, which brings me to the philosophical ideas that are here in the Perek. Clearly, the overarching theme is perceiving Hashem's greatness. Right, that's there throughout the Perek. We saw it in the chorus. And the Malbim, the Radak writes, that's why it's specifically Nafshi. Here, I can give you another sheet so you can follow the sources also.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, a wealth of paper.
Yeah.
The Nafshi specifically, says the Radak in source number 4. V'amar brachi nafshi, ki ein betonim mi sheyeda levarech, ela nefesh ha'adam hamaskeles. He says there's nothing in this lower world that can really understand enough to praise Hashem, except the heart of man, which has insight, exactly. And the Pasuk says, Godalta, right? In the beginning there, in the beginning of the parak, Godalta Me'od, right? What does that mean? You've become great. Hashem is great. So it's not pshat, you have become great, but Radak says in source number 5, you see it? He says, Mima'asecha anu mevinim ki gadalta me'od. From your deeds we comprehend that you are so great. It's not that you were lower and now Hashem you became great. It's that we now comprehend your greatness. That's the idea of gadalta. Okay. Another of the major themes here, though, is Hashem's treatment of his creations.
I think here, yeah. Isn't this what he's saying? So I think it's you're translating it.
Well, that just says that it's interlinear.
Here they say Hashem Elokai Gadol Atah Me'od.
Exactly.
Not that you
not
became
Gadol.
Greater. Yeah,
right.
Gadol Atah Me'od.
Exactly.
That we recognize
they're addressing
that you
this
are,
problem.
Yeah, yeah.
They're addressing exactly
yeah.
that problem.
Yeah.
The major theme, Hashem's treatment of his creations. Specifically 3 points, which I think I put on the sheet. Hashem dwarfs nature. Hashem sets limits for his creations. But Hashem is very attentive to their needs. All of these are here. The Hashem dwarfing nature is there right at the very start. When you see the description of Hashem's creation of light and dark, right, in Pasuk Beis, it says, right, Hashem cloaks himself in light, right? So it's the light that Hashem created, which we think of as the energy by which we survive, that Hashem is just a garment. Hashem creates a roof for our realm in Pasuk Gimel, right? In Pasuk Hay, Yasad Eretz al Mechoneha, this one fascinates me, I love this Pasuk. Yasad Eretz al Mechoneha bal kimot olam va'ed. Hashem founds the earth, establishes the earth on its foundation, lest it ever falter, right? Who in the world, who in the universe can create something permanent? I mean, the idea of creating something permanent is so novel. It doesn't exist. Only Hashem creates something permanent. Hashem sets limits for his creation. So he sets the location. He says to the water, you're over here. And the mountains, you're over here. Day, you're over here. Now it's going to be night. All the things that we think of, all the boundaries that we think of, are all set by Hashem. And Hashem is described as being attentive to his creation's needs every single step of the way. So he creates the rain via wind and heat. Take a look at Pasuk Dalet. This is fascinating. Oseh, you see that? Oseh malacha bruchos misharsav eish lohet. Hashem makes the winds into his messengers. He takes the fire and he uses it to serve him. So Malbim comments on that. That's how Hashem creates rain. He uses the combination of air pressure and heat to create rain, which we know, it's interesting, there's a whole cycle that works from the equator. I'm blanking on the name, I did research on this a while back. Hadley cells, that's what they're called. When you have at the equator, you have the longest exposure of the sun's heat, of light really. So that heats up the air, causes the air to rise. As the air rises, it sheds moisture. That's why you have tropical rainforests. Then it moves north and south to about 30 degrees latitude north and 30 degrees south, at which point it starts to cool and it sinks. And as it sinks, it gathers up moisture, which is why you have deserts at the 30 degree mark on either side, the horse latitudes. The air stable is just very, very stable there. It soaks up the moisture and then it moves back towards the equator, because at the equator you have this gap, you have a vacuum, because the air is rising, and it draws in the air there. So the whole cycle of rain as well as desert is really occurring. because of two things: heat and air pressure.
Air pressure.
Exactly this pasuk. The Osem al Chavru Kos Mishari Savei Shlo Heit. Whether the Malbim had studied Hadley cells or not, I can't tell you. But it's all there. The you also see here about Hashem providing for our nutritional needs, right? Pasuk Yidalet, Pasuk Tesvav, making sure that you have the grain for bread, you have the wine, you have the oil. Right, you see that? Even nighttime has a function. Pasuk Chav. People think of night as an absence of light. But night is actually an entity with its own purpose. Tashas choshech v'hi laila. You set up night and now it's dark, right? You set up the darkness and now it's night. And that's when the animals can go out and take care of their own needs. Take a look at source number 6. The Radak writes it explicitly. Ata zachar toeles halayla. Now he mentioned the benefits of night. Utesumet hachoshech, placement of darkness. Hishkias haor, which is the setting of the light, the sinking of the light. The if you take a look also in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, you have the kfirim, right? Hashem pays attention to the needs of the young lions that are calling out. Pasuk Chaf Zayin Talamid, Kulam Elecha Yisaberun. Everybody turns to Hashem for their food, for Hashem to give them their food at their proper time. Hashem gives it to them, they have it, Hashem hides, and suddenly they don't have anything. You know? What's particularly interesting to me, I don't have an explanation for it, is that there's no description of a direct interaction between Hashem and man. We describe Hashem providing for man. There's nothing, you know, there's no description of man turning to God. For the animals, there is. The lion, the young lions turn to God, this one turns to God. For the humans, there isn't. Yeah. Another theme here is the complexity of nature's interlocking relationships. Symbiosis. Take a look back at Pasuk Yud Yud Beis, please. I have to find it myself. Here we go. Right? Hashem sends forth the springs and the into the rivers, feeding the rivers. The rivers travel among the mountains, and that's how the animals drink. And that's how the wild donkeys get what they need. That's where the birds stay. The Hashem gives the water to the mountains from his upper realms, and that produces the plants. It's not really symbiosis as much as it's that Hashem is providing for the needs. Here's another interlocking thing in Pasuk Ted Zion Yud Zion. The water supports the trees, and therefore the birds are able to have nests. So it's a chain. It's not really a symbiosis. It's more of a chain. The Radak does this throughout the entire Perek. Radak tries to highlight the benefits that we receive from Hashem's creations. We also see Hashem's creatures serving Hashem. Take a look at Pasuk Dalet. The winds and the heat serving Hashem, right? Like that we talked about. Take a look at source number 7 that I bring you on the sheets. This is Radak's comment. The winds that blow are his malachim, his emissaries, for nothing is happenstance. All is with the intent of the intender. Which is funny, the Radak's phrase, I don't know if he's thinking about this, but one of the phrases that people use when they want to talk about something random is to say that he goes with the wind. Here is to the opposite. The wind is what Hashem planned. The Pasuk Chav Gimel is another fascinating example. He includes man as a part. I'm sorry, let me take a step back. This is actually a separate theme. It's the theme of man as part of nature, not as a separate being observing nature. Usually we don't do this. Usually we like to think of man as separate from nature because, as you know, I had a Rebbe in 7th grade who used to say, if you believe that man is the highest form of animal, right, the whole evolution concept, then you're condemning man never to elevate himself. Right? That's all we'll believe, that we're the highest form of animal. You need to recognize the higher level of man. But here, that's not what he does. Here he's portraying man as part of nature. So you have back in Pasuk Yudalid Tezvav, Hashem feeding man the same way he feeds the animals. In Pasuk Chav Gimel, we have Hashem creating the day and the night cycle, and man is subject to it the same way that the animals are. In Pasuk Chavav, we talk about the human beings' boats traveling on the water, as well as the Livyasan, right? Traveling on the water.
So is man being part of nature, or is it just his interaction?
It feels like he's
with nature.
Well, it's both. When you interact, you're a part of something. To a certain extent, it's a humbling of man. Yeah, when you look at what Hashem does, when you look at the vastness of creation, you know, it inclines you to say, you know what, I guess we're not so great. Okay. Another theme, which to me is a very jarring one, but it produces a fascinating idea, is the theme of death. People are wont to think of death as a defeat of Hashem. The Hashem has been defeated, and people, you know, when people die, that's not the way he looks at it. Take a look at Pasuk Chavtes. People usually think of that as death being a defeat of Hashem's plan and of Hashem. Not people in terms of Judaism, but just in general. You know, that a person is alive and a person is born and a person has a mission to fulfill, and then death puts a halt to it. That's not the way it's portrayed here. Rather, it's another of Hashem's actions. Tasir panecha yibahelu. Right? In Pasuk Chavtes. You hide your face, they're confused, they're bewildered. Tosei Bruchem, you gather in their spirit, Yigvon, they die. Be'la Param Yeshuvun, and they return to the earth. Teshalach Ruchacha, you'll send forth your spirit, Yibareim, they'll be created. Chadesh Pnei Adama, and everything will be rejuvenated. This image here is death as a withdrawal of support and an act of God. And here we'll find two ways in which that works. One, part of the natural order, and two, a specific intervention. Take a look as it continues. He says, Yichvar Hashem le'olam yismach shebe ma'asav. You can sit down.
I just wanted to ask you about tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night is on, yeah. Yes. And it's going to be a good one, too. I like what I did with this one. Yichvar Hashem le'olam yismach Hashem be ma'asav. May Hashem's honor be forever. May Hashem rejoice in his creations. Ha'mavit la'aretz v'atir'ah yigah be'harim v'yeh. Right? He looks to the earth and the earth trembles. He touches the mountains and they produce smoke. This is much more than Hashem hiding his face and people suffering. This is an act of destruction. And it continues. Right? Sins ending from the earth. Two ways you can take that. Right? Remember the famous story of Beruya and Rabbi Meir about the wicked people. Their Beryonim are bothering Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir has had enough of them. Remember, the Beryonim are the zealots who want to get the Jews to revolt against the Romans, right? The famous Gemara in Gittin. So this is before that. Rabbi Meir is significantly before that time. But Rabbi Meir is after that time. Just the opposite. Rabbi Meir is already later. Because Rabbi Meir is the Rebbe of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So he's already post Bar Kokhba even. But these Beryonim, so by that time, zealots may not even have a political connotation. It may simply be these people who don't listen to anybody. They're attacking Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir davens that they should die. And his wife, Beruya, hears him, the Gemara in Bracha says, and she says, that's not what you should do. You should daven for them to do tshuva. And Rabbi Meir agrees, and they daven, they do tshuva. But she brings a proof from this pasuk. Pasuk Lamed Hey. Yitamu chata'im min ha'aretz v'rasha'im odeinam. So she says, that means that the chata'im, the sins, should disappear, and there will be no more wicked people. People should stop sinning. They should do tshuva. Now, from a grammatical perspective, that's not so. And Rashi actually notes it over here on Chataim. He writes Chotim. From a grammar perspective, it's not like Berea. Nonetheless, Al Derech Drash, that's what we say. My point here is that we find Hashem withdrawing support, and that causes death, and we find Hashem actively causing death.
Passive and active.
Right. And the Malbim explains a side of death that I had never thought of until I saw this Malbim. This was brand new to me. So I'm very grateful for having the opportunity to give this shir, because I would never ever have looked at the Malbim on Kuv Dalet. I have a lot of things I have to see first. But this is a very, very interesting line. Source number 8. Shim hayu ha'ishim kayamim tamid. If people would live forever, lo haya nikar kavodo mitzadayos mechadeshu barei. So we wouldn't recognize Hashem's glory as the creator of everything. Right? Because we would think of ourselves as always having been here. We would live forever. Vayu mamrim kavodo. We would rebel against Hashem's honor. Bechashvam shem kadmonim v'kayamim ba'atzmam. Thinking that we were always here. That we existed on our own. Aval ayidei amisa, but via death. Kula makirim es yotzom u'mechabdim oso. Everyone has to recognize their creator. That they came into the world at some point, and therefore they'll give him honor.
But man would recognize being creator creates in you when you're talking about spring, when plants, everything.
Right, we would assume that everything else. Well, first of all, death here isn't just human death.
Yeah.
It's death across the board.
So, say in nature, then, every spring you're seeing the renewal of trees,
right,
and all that.
But that's a function of the death that he puts in here. In other words, all of that is part of this. He says, were it not for death, not just death for people, were it not for death universally,
then you wouldn't recognize.
Then you would never recognize that. Exactly. That's the it's just a fascinating take. I had never looked at it that way. There's also an element of eschatology here. Eschatology is the concept of Mashiach. Mashiach Kias HaMesim. Radak sees it in Pasuk Lamed. Teshalachu Chachayi Bareyun, right? Is right after the Pasuk of Death. You will send forth your spirit and they'll be created. So take a look at source number 9. This is Radak. Lefi Emunasenu Anachnu Zera Yisrael Hamachzikim Be'emunasenu. According to our belief, we the children of Israel who hold on to our belief, Yiyu Anefashos Chozros Elachomer Harishon Asher Yatzu Mimenu Lizman Chiyas HaMesim. Oops, I wrote that in twice. Asher Yadanu Boakel Yisbarach. He says, we believe that the souls will return to the original material from which they had departed at the time of Chiyas HaMesim, which Hashem has told us about. V'yazal derech neis u'pela, it'll be a miracle, a wonder, v'lo k'fiat teva, not natural. Al ze omar teshalach luchachayi barein, regarding this it is written, you will send forth your spirit, they will be created, u'schadesh pnei adama, and renewed, the face of the earth will be renewed. The face of the earth will be renewed. So he sees a reference to, he also says, I could see you reading this in general as Hashem's creation, but it lends itself also to Tchiyas HaMesim because it's right after the Pasuk of Death.
How do you see this right through all of the last 5 psukim?
I'm sorry?
You said that this actually... Sorry,
yeah, because if you take a look at Lamed He, take a look at Lamed He, Yitalu Chatem and Aretz U'Shra'im Oreinam, the idea of the wicked not existing anymore, a time when there is no wickedness. They take a look in source number 10, the Malbim on that. Shagam Sheyimatsu Od Chataim, he says there will be sin. Sheyechtu Mitzad HaTaiva VaYetzer, people will sin because they're compelled by their desire to sin. But however, lo yimtzu or lo yimatzu marshim bezidon leif. You won't find people who sin intentionally to attack. Ke'akiru mishpatei Hashem. They'll recognize Hashem's laws. Ve'yiru milarshia. They'll be afraid to do something wicked. This is an important point. There's a big debate about what happens to averos in the time of Mashiach. Is there really no more sin? Is that really true? It's a machlokes. So Malbim says there will be sin as a result of taiva, but not sin as a result of just wickedness. wickedness.
But it's your yetzer that creates, that causes you to sin, isn't it?
Yes. But it's not that type of a yetzer. In other words, when he uses the term yetzer, he doesn't mean yetzer globally. No. What he's talking about is that inside a person that refuses to be controlled, that says, I want to go do what I want to do, or that doesn't believe that Hashem did everything for us. That's what he's talking about. Yeah. So one last point on this, though, on this parak, this whole moral of the story at the end, this whole eschatology element, doesn't seem to fit in a poem that's really about Hashem's creation of nature. So three different ways to approach it. One, as we've said, it's an outgrowth of describing death as part of Hashem's creation. Number two, Dat Mikra has a fascinating suggestion. He says, in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Ashira Lashem Bechayai was a neder. A person is vowing, I will sing to Hashem. And what he's saying is, I will sing to Hashem, and I have a bakasha, Hashem, from you. My bakasha is that in exchange for my singing to you, Yitamu Chataim in Aretz, you should bring in this time of Mashiach. That's Das Mikra's approach. But I'd also suggest a third approach. We have two so far. Number one, it's an outgrowth of describing death, so we also describe the ultimate Mashiach, Kiyas HaMeisim. A second, that this is a request we make in exchange for our recognition of Hashem. And then third, maybe this closing set of psukim is actually what appreciating nature is all about. In other words, it's not that appreciating nature is automatically a religious experience. It's because I use it to create this Barchi Nafshi Es Hashem. That's what makes it religious. And so David HaMelech is saying, it's not that it's inherently, you know, valuable. It's valuable because it drives me to this point of saying Barchi Nafshi Es Hashem.
Very good.
Thank you very much.